Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long at 545. We will have our triple option feature. Steve Geller will join us. And we'll tell everybody at 7 o'clock it'll be the Saints Hour with the voice of the Saints, Mike Haas. Jeff Nowak will join us, who's our WWL Saints sideline reporter and digital content producer, along with Anish Shroff, who is the play-by-play announcer for the Carolina Panthers, and Saints Executive Vice President of Marketing and Chief Operating Officer Ben Hales. At 4:20 is Tulane Tuesday, so got the winning coach. John Sumrall will be on with us, and John put up a big W against the Southeast Lions, 52-0, an impressive start for Tulane. But there was a few hiccups along the way. I got coaches in my family, and they always talk about I love big wins, and I love wins when there's a few mess-ups here and there, so there's a little meat on the bone I can get after my players. And he returns at that 5:20 spot on Tuesdays. Mark Schlereth will be on with us, Odyssey NFL insider, also now has a TV gig on a daily basis, so we congratulate Mark for getting back on Fox Sports, and we'll have Stink on with us to talk about the NFL. And this weekend it'll be the Saints Carolina for Chris Myers, Mark Schlereth, Jen Hale. They're doing it here. So we got a lot of local flavor covering Saints Carolina. Charlie, in the big news today, Trent Williams. And, man, goes to show prayers answered. We talked about this yesterday. Man, if I was Christian McCaffrey or Brock Purdy, I might have broke the rosary beads. Because, man, I need Trent Williams back out on the field. He got a new reworked contract. And, you know, he talked about it today, about there's some give and take. And it's so funny, every year, I think the last 20 years I did my draft book, I did a feature every year of going to about a dozen people in the NFL who were scouts, director, player personnel, people involved, even one GM who agreed to do it, about the top players in the NFL. They rarely agree on anything. And I still do it. I still send it to them, and they still send it back to me. And as a rare agreement on the one guy at one position who's the best. Charlie, for the last 6 years, you know who's the best left tackle in pro football is Trent Williams. And when they got him from the – I don't think they were the Commanders. I think they were the Redskins still back then.
Washington.
Yeah. They gave up a third and a fifth-round pick. He's 36 years old. He's still the best left tackle in the game and dominant. And a dude that's he's an intimidator. He sort of exudes an odor, sort of speaks, that, man, I'm the toughest guy out there, and y'all want to tackle and fool around with me, you come on. I'll show you just how good I am. And he is a dominant player, so he is back with the San Francisco 49ers. And, again, the best left tackle in the game, so Brock Purdy and Christian McCaffrey, it goes to show you the power of prayer.
Yeah, and so as far as those two guys that the 49ers were in contract negotiations with throughout the offseason, both of those guys are now starting week one happy. And with Trent Williams, you kind of always saw this coming, Mike, as you mentioned. So we also have to, you know, detail what happened with this deal as far as the 49ers reworking this three-year deal.
He got a lot of money up front, didn't he?
$82.66 million.
I can pay that $5 million fine with that $86.
$48 million guaranteed at signing. And a $25.69 million signing bonus. So $103 million in guarantees since joining the Niners in 2021 via NFL.com. And as far as money this upcoming year, you know, we had talked about this. A couple guys got signed in the offseason, like Christian Darrisaw, and then other guys that have been signed in the past, like Laremy Tunsil, these elite tackles, Penei Sewell, all these guys. they're not Trent Williams. And so Trent Williams was seeing all these guys getting paid big money, and even though he's 36 years old, as you mentioned, Mike, he's still at the top of his game. He's still looking for, you know, another big payday before he kind of rides off into the sunset in a couple of years. And the 49ers gave it to him, and he deserves every penny of it. So
and
now
this
Trent
is a
Williams,
guy that had brain cancer with the Washington, well, at that time, Redskins, not the Commanders. He missed an entire season. And then, you know, a lot of people thought he was a malcontent. What? When you're dealing with that type of disease and that type of illness? And then they trade. Well, it's not some dumb things Washington was doing back there, but that maybe was the dumbest of the thing to trade him off to San Francisco, where he's become the guy, the man at that left tackle position. And name me the other four guys of the starters of 49ers up front along the offensive line.
You really can't. You know, and that was
but
actually,
you do remember one.
That was actually part of the reason back in the draft we kind of anticipated that they would take an offensive tackle, right? It would have made sense in a really strong tackle class, maybe an interior guy too, and they had their opportunity to, and they ended up taking Ricky Pearsall in the first round. And, you know, we're happy to hear that Ricky Pearsall's okay after that scary incident in San Francisco.
That's a crazy incident. But, Charlie, before we go to – let's take Eric.
Yeah,
We got Tulane Tuesday. So we're going to go to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. Let's go to Eric. Eric, you're in the huddle with Mike and Charlie. We might have cut with Eric. Also other news today, and I asked about him last night because, man, he's sort of been in the witness protection agency, Kalavon Chaisson, and he was cut loose by the Carolina Panthers. Man, Kalavon came out with a lot of expectations. He had some pass rush skills that were really good. He never developed a counter move. He had one speed move, and it was good now. It was really good, but he never developed a counter move today because, man, I hadn't heard much from anything from anybody covering the Panthers. So we talked to Jim Zocchi last night. He was like, Mike, I think he'd be part of the rotation. Well, he's not even going to be part of that. He was cut loose today. Former first-round pick of the Jacksonville Jaguars, man, from LSU.
The Jags have picked some stinkers recently, Mike, and that's been a big issue for them is drafting. But former first-round pick and a guy that when we were talking with Zocchi last night about the strengths and weaknesses on this Carolina Panthers roster, they don't know who the starting defensive end next to, you know, Jadeveon Clowney is going to be. It's not just that they don't have one. They can't find one.
They don't know who it's going to be.
Exactly. So, I mean, Jadeveon Clowney, in his own right, he had a great season with the Ravens last year. He came back to Carolina. It's like a homecoming for him. He's not necessarily in the twilight of his career. He's getting older, but he can still produce. He showed that last year with the Ravens. But if you only have one pass rusher on the edge, I mean, you're not going to be successful defensively, Mike.
Yeah, and okay, it blows that theory, and I keep saying it. Next man up, okay, that's great for the coaches to say. Some people repeat it, and you ain't going to hear it from here. That next man up, okay, he ain't Brian Burns. Brian Burns was a cut above, but he wanted to get paid, and so they shipped him off to the New York Giants instead. Now, there's nobody there to really fill those shoes.
And that's exactly why, you know, you want to talk about weakness versus weakness. We've talked about the Saints' offensive tackles and how you feel pretty decent about Taliese Fuaga entering his rookie year, but you are very terrified about what's going to happen at the right tackle position with Trevor Penning. It doesn't seem like the Panthers are necessarily the team to exploit that, Mike. Their strength on the defensive line is more on the interior with exactly. Derrick Brown and A'shaun Robinson, but, you know, the Saints have kind of better, I guess, interior play with Eric McCoy and maybe, I guess, to a lesser extent, Cesar Ruiz.
We'll be back with our Tulane Tuesday segment right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTella along with Charlie Long in studio. It's our Tulane Tuesday segment. It's brought to you by Bayou Black Electric, your electrical connection in the heart of South Louisiana. Learn more at BayouBlackElectric.com. on our Oakland Hard Jewelers Talk and Text line, the head coach of the Tulane Green Wave, John Summerall. Coach, first of all, thank you for joining us, and congratulations on the win Thursday night against Southeastern. I got coaches in my family, and they always tell me this. Man, Mike, I love big wins, but I want a little bit of meat on the bone. I don't want it to go to their head too quickly. Now, sometimes it takes a little harder to find than others, but you got the big win, and I think you got some meat on the bone to chew on or to have them kind of don't be too complacent with this.
No, you're dead on, man. It's nice that, you know, the scoreboard looks good, 52-0. Everybody's patting everybody on the back, but there's plenty of things left for us to clean up. We didn't play to our standard in a lot of areas, and it's a lot nicer to be able to make those corrections after the result we had. And, you know, I tell our staff all the time, when we win, you need to coach the guys really hard. And why? Well, because everybody's girlfriend and mom and everybody in the neighborhood's telling them how great they are, you know? And I'm like, well, we're not that far off from getting humbled real fast if we don't improve, because the competition gets real here real fast, and we've got to elevate our play and play to a different standard. But always good to get a win. Great start for the year. Fantastic crowd. I thought our student section was amazing last Thursday night watching them. But plenty of things for us to improve upon.
Coach, one of the things, man, watching Darian Mensah, he is everything that I know you've been on with us a couple of times. You talked about his poise and how well, you know, you don't know until you know how they handle a situation, because you can do great in practice, and sometimes that's a carryover, and then sometimes there's guys that are really good in practice, man, they hit the lights, not quite the same. What impressed me the most was he throws a dart to Dante Fleming in the end zone. Dante didn't come down with it, with the catch. He goes right back and he hits it with another player for a score. And I think for a young guy in his first game as a collegiate player, that showed me all I needed to know, that he had a lot of poise. He was steady behind the wheel and he just kept going at it.
Yeah, dead on. He's very cool. He's very calm. He's very collected. He's got great poise about him. You know, we had seen that all through spring practice. You had seen it all through summer workouts. And we felt it all during training camp. But to your point, we're not talking about a guy that was just getting his first start last week. We're talking about a guy that was getting his first in-game college football action.
Yep.
And it happened to be a start, right? And so you don't know. You're exactly right. There are certain guys that – maybe they look good in practice, and in the games they don't quite play to what you see in practice. And so for me, my biggest concern going to the game wasn't is he capable, but just making sure that he focused on being himself and not worrying about the moment or what could come with it, and just, you know, playing within himself and trusting his teammates and executing at the line of scrimmage the right way and being efficient with his communication. And he did that so well. And, you know, to your point about, you know, the missed the opportunity on the drop, and then he came back and he threw the touchdown to Yoel Keith.
Yep.
I think maybe my favorite thing from the entire game with Darian was when Ty Thompson scored his first rushing touchdown. and the first guy off our bench to go celebrate with Ty was Darian Mensah. Well, that tells me as much about the guy as anything else. Is like, hey, here's a guy playing the same position that's coming to take you off the field so we can run a different package with a different player. And he's celebrating that guy's success. And that's what this game's all about. I mean, we all know only one quarterback can get the ball, and that's the nature of the beast. But being there for your teammates, encouraging your teammates, and celebrating their success too, that's what being a great teammate looks like. And that's kind of who the kid's been. That's who he's shown to be. And I'm proud of how he handled the moment. Now, things are going to speed up on him a little bit. You know, the rush is going to get a little faster. The windows are going to get a little tighter. We're going to play a little bit different type of club this week. And but really, the biggest thing for him is just play within yourself still and trust the process of your preparation.
I was talking to an NFL GM today, and he told me, man, early success happened to Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, and then you get a little film on them. And everybody sees what they can do really well and what they can't do. Now, college is one thing, the NFL is another. And we'll see how good it is. That's what made C.J. Stroud such an impressive player last year, because he continued it throughout the entire year. But you had to also like the fact you ran the ball 39 times, 241 yards rushing, 6.2 yards a carry. Coach, if you run the ball 39 times in a game, you winning. That's all I know. That stat of over 30 carries or more and you win 88% of the time. But when you average in 6.2 yards a carry, that showed a big – because, listen, that's no preseason for college football. There ain't no jamboree game, okay? This ain't high school football, no jamborees. For you to have that kind of balance the scale with the passing game, but also 241 yards rushing and average 6.2 yards a carry, that really showed up big.
Yeah, I thought as the game went on, we ran the ball more effectively. Early in the game, we missed a couple of targets that were moving up front. And, you know, sometimes you have to kind of find the rhythm within the game, maybe what a team's doing structurally up front to combat your run game. But we've got an experienced offensive line, and we got obviously Mekhi is sort of a household name, but really the carries were distributed amongst a lot of guys last Thursday. And, it, you know, everybody talks about, you know, you can throw to score, but you got to run to win.
Yep.
And teams, you just mentioned the stats about, you know, how many times you run the football and how much it correlates to winning the game. At the end of the day, I don't care what your style of play is, whether it's a spread system or a pro style system or a huddle system or a tempo system. I mean, you got to be able to run the daggum football. And if you can't run the ball, you have a hard time really competing with anybody, anywhere. And that bodes well, I think, maybe for opportunity to have long-term success. We got to keep building upon that. Like I said, I thought we started a little bit slow in the run game. I thought we kind of got it going as the game went. It's going to be a critical factor in this week's game. Kansas State's been really good running the football and really good stopping the run. So we got to make sure we hold our own there at minimum in that part of the game. But excited to see our guys have some success on the ground. And you know, when you got a young quarterback, if he can run the football, it makes his job a whole hell of a lot easier too. And so it's nice for the kid to be able to have some backs and an offensive line that he feels, you know, we feel comfortable can help lead the charge at some points for him.
Coach, before we get to that K-State game, I want to ask you about Rayshon Pleasant, who was named the AAC Defensive Player of the Week. We all know that 100-yard pick six at the very end of the first half, and you know the announcers were talking about it on air, saying that, oh, Southeastern's made some plays, but they've made some big mistakes, and none in the first half were bigger than that. Rayshon Pleasant getting a huge pick six, a sophomore defensive back. And we had talked with you, I think it was last week or maybe a couple weeks ago, about the overturn kind of in the defensive back room for this Tulane Green Wave team. And what did you just see kind of early on from, you know, Rayshon Pleasant and then the secondary in general?
Yeah, you know, Rayshon, proud of him. He's had a couple of injuries here. He's a really talented kid. He's from North Louisiana up near Monroe. And he's a really quality kid, a hard worker. So anytime you see a guy that's invested so much in his craft like Rayshon has, it's great to see the reward come for him. And on that play, too, tremendous effort by him, but so many guys – our defense giving great effort. You know, Tyler Grubb's block on that return is something I'll never forget because he sprinted his tail off to go lay out a 300-pound offensive lineman, you know, and he gave his body up for his teammate. And so many of our guys executed that return so well by getting in the way and running down the field. And some guys delivered big blows. Some guys just kind of shielded a guy and were smart by how they ran interference to help escort Rayshon down the field. And, you know, I thought we played okay in the secondary. You know, the ball was out quick a lot, and that didn't really give our pass rush much of an opportunity to work. And our secondary, there were some nuanced things that I thought we could handle better. You know, sometimes maybe if we're playing soft coverage, we need to disguise better and not show it so quick to give the access throw. You know, and understanding maybe just some formation things that can give you some tips to what routes could be coming. I think we've got solid players, but I still think we got a lot of room to grow in just our detail back there. And, you know, Rayshon did a nice job. Jonathan Edwards and Michael Robinson did a solid job. And Slim Despaney's kind of been the bell cow around here that's returning, and Caleb Ransall. Some of those guys are good players, but I think as a group, we got to continue to grow. One other thing I thought we didn't do a great job of at times is just understanding the crack blocks and when it releases a player from coverage and maybe leveraging the football and triggering on the run at the right time, and when a certain blocking scheme pulls a secondary player into the run. So I thought we were a touch delayed at some of those things, just recognizing them. But we'll get better at that. We got to get better at it quick, though.
Coach, one of the guys caught my eye, and he's a great story, and that's Cameron Hamilton. Saw him when he was at Zachary, and, man, he gives you some edge pressure, and he's pedal to the metal every play.
Great kid, you know, hard worker. He's got great length and athleticism. And, you know, the play he made, the first drive of the game, myself and Greg McMahon, our special teams coordinator, we decided to go after the punt, and it was really my call. And we didn't execute the rush the right way. We ran to the punter and went three and out and then gave him a new set of downs. And that was unfortunate because we had a guy not rush on the shield with the proper leverage, and he ended up kind of running to the punter a little. But gave him a new set of downs. They moved the ball. And Cam, down after they got on our side of the field, Cam made a really special play. He was in the stack. He was kind of stunting from a four technique to a three. He was to the reduction side. And in that, he took on a blocker in the interior offensive line. We had a couple guys free to make the play on the back. They just flat out missed the play. And Cam popped out and forced a fumble, and I thought he really played a solid game. I mean, I thought, you know, Rayshon Pleasant obviously played great. I thought Cam played really well, and I thought Tyler Grubbs played at a really high level. And so proud of Cam and his contributions. He's a great kid, great story, and a really good teammate, a very likable kid just by how he carries himself.
And, Coach, we said we were going to get into it, and let's just jump right in. Kansas State coming into Yeoman Stadium this upcoming weekend is obviously very exciting. K-State picked second in the preseason poll at the Big 12 behind Utah. Very, very close, though. It was about a seven-point separation there. And as you kind of mentioned, the rushing attack and defense was on full display in their opener against UT Martin, where they won 41-6. They rushed for 283 yards, and they held UT Martin to 36 yards. The difference of 9.1 yards per carry versus 0.9 yards per carry is pretty stark, Coach. So what can you kind of tell us about K-State? You know, their rushing attack, their rushing defense, and what else kind of stands out about them heading into this year, the number 17 team in the country?
Yeah, everything you just said, you're dead on. I mean, they're great at running the football. They're great at stopping the run. And, you know, they're committed to the run game offensively. The quarterback, they didn't run him as much as I expect him to moving forward. He's a tremendous athlete. He's the fastest kid on their team is what I've been told. He's got real speed. The Avery Johnson kid, you know, he's the starter. They asked the Will Howard kid, I guess, to move on to Ohio State so they could start this kid. And so that tells you enough about how they feel about him. He's a talented player. So they're really good at running the football and playing physical at the line of scrimmage, and their receivers make plays down the field off their run action shot plays. And then defensively, they play a three-safety scheme where they can kind of give you some targeting issues if you're not really sound in how you're blocking things up. And so that can present issues in its own right. And then I think probably the area where they stand out to me the most is honestly is on special teams. I think you look at Chris Klieman, he's been the head coach there now 6 years, and they blocked three punts in the last year and a half, last 15 games. They blocked one last week against Martin. They blocked two last season, and they're really good on special teams. They got good depth on their special teams. They got a core group of players that play a lot of snaps on their special teams units, especially the four core teams. And so that's where we got to be really sound is challenge our punt team today to play at a high level, and our kickoff team has to improve after last week's performance. I don't think we're very good there. And so we're going to have our work cut out for us. But this is a quality team. They're the type of team, you know, they're very well coached. They're very disciplined. They're very detailed. And they don't beat themselves. You got to earn it against them. They don't give you anything. And so we've got to do the same thing and be really sound in what we're doing and just make sure we play good, clean football.
Coach, last question for you. This is the type of game, giveaway, takeaway. it's going to play such a big part of it.
Yeah.
You'd love to be on the plus side, but if you could, even because you know they've always been a team. I'm not saying they're a big play team. They like to kind of grind it out. They'll make a play on special teams or on defense. They love to run the football. But, man, it's one of those deals. If you're turning the ball over, you're not beating this team. They too fundamentally sound. And that goes back to the coach's days at North Dakota State, where it was the same thing there. They kind of wanted to beat you up in the trenches and sort of, okay, if you want to play small ball, that's good. I'll play that with you. And they were really good at it. And he's taken that mantra sort of to Kansas State.
No, you're exactly right. They, you know, they'll run the football and they'll milk the clock and they don't turn it over and they count you turn it over. And, you know, they, even by the way they run power, you know, like their power O play kind of resembles to me their team. They're, you know, a lot of people now run power a little bit wider. They're still an A-gap to A-gap power team. And they're downhill, they're physical, and that's just the nature of how they play the game. I have a ton of respect for how they play, and I do think you're dead on. I think the turnover margin's critical in this game. You know, it'd be nice for us to steal a possession or two and find a way to get the ball off of them and protect the football. I mean, that usually bodes well for giving you a shot to be successful in any game, but I think in this game, even more so, the importance there is glaring because – this is a team, you know, I've coached against them and I've talked to several people that have played against them in their league. And they're like, man, if you don't watch out, they'll lull you to sleep. You'll think the game's not moving real fast. And you'll look up and you'll be down a couple scores. And you're like, how'd that happen? And so we got to be really sound. And going back to what I was saying earlier, we just can't beat ourselves. You know, we got a hard enough opponent on the other sideline this Saturday. We don't need to do anything to beat ourselves. And so, the wave can't beat the wave. We got to be sound in what we're doing there and play good football.
Coach Summerall, thanks so much for joining us. Good luck this coming Saturday against Kansas State, and don't turn the ball over.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Come on now. I might need you to come tell my guys that, too.
All right, we'll do it. Thank you, Coach.
Y'all have a great day.
Thanks, Coach.
That was Coach John Summerall on our TruLane Tuesday, and that was brought to you by Bayou Black Electric, your electrical connection in the heart of South Louisiana. Learn more at BayouBlackElectric.com. We'll come back. Got a couple callers on the line. We'll go to that right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTay along with Charlie Long. Let's go to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. Let's try it again. One more time, Eric. You're in the huddle with Mike and Charlie.
Hey. Hey, I want to get your take on this here. Now,
right.
I know Josh Williams and John Emery, pretty good ball players, but they're not the home run hitters that LSU needs. So what's the problem with, you know, Caden Drew? He's the 120-meter sprint champion in high school. And you know what Caleb Jackson is capable of. So what's the take so long to get the two guys in the game?
Yeah, I think the one thing with Shelton Sampson that you had asked about was Shelton, man, they stress emphasize in throwing a block downfield. And last year when he got in the game, Brian Kelly said it was 80-20. He would come down with the catch on, there was 50-50 throws. No, it was more like 90-10, and he had the 10. He wasn't making those plays. No, Shelton, one thing sometimes from something bad that happens, you learn something. Other than Zachariah Barnes, look the size of USC's receivers going up against those DBs. Man, Shelton Sampson gives you that size differential downfield. He can really get up in the air to make a catch. And so you would love that, and hopefully you can get the speed of Chris Hilton back.
That was something they were really
from
missing.
The injury, because they didn't really stretch the field. Now, Kyren's fast once he catches the ball.
Yeah,
now,
but
he's
Hilton,
no track sprinter, sort of speak. That's not him. Chris Hilton's on a different level speed-wise.
And he opens up a lot for Kyren as well. It's almost kind of a similar situation like we talked about with Rashid Shaheed and Chris Olave.
Very similar, Charlie.
Yeah, like you're having right. A guy that can take the top off the defense, you got to pay attention to him. And that's what Chris Hilton has. He has elite speed. So some
same
of the best speed on the
team. Jelani Watkins.
Yes, yeah, the freshman. But with Shelton Sampson, he's an interesting one, Mike, because he's got the size as far as height goes, right? He's a 6'4". You know, he was super highly recruited out of Catholic Baton Rouge, a former 4-star guy.
He could have went anywhere.
Yeah, he really could have. He was 4-star, but he was the number 6 ranked receiver in the class of 2023. The thing about him is he's kind of slim. Mike, he's listed at 195. So, you know, you're talking about potentially getting involved in the run blocking game, but what Coach Kelly was saying, you know, the bite that I used for the Sports Flash earlier in his presser today was he needs to get involved in the passing attack. And I think, you know, you hope
that play him then.
Exactly, which you got to give him snaps. And that's what I think Coach Kelly was saying. They got to ramp him up to get him ready starting this upcoming weekend against Nicholls State. And if he's ready to go, get him involved, because that's just another weapon that you can use in the passing attack. And you have Shelton Sampson, a really talented, highly recruited guy, and then you also add Chris Hilton, who was injured and missed that first game, back to the lineup. Yeah, I think LSU's passing attack is just going to be fine. And they were, look, Kyron Lacy was awesome in the first half, we all know, but USC schemed to get him out of the game in the second half. And Coach Kelly kind of made, I don't want to say subtle jabs necessarily at the offensive play calling that
it
they
wasn't
didn't.
No subtle. It was.
Yeah, he basically said.
He threw the jab.
He basically said we should have gotten him the ball more right. In the second half.
And that's something that Bob brought up yesterday about they were playing bracket coverage. But sometimes, yeah. You, especially in the red zone, you got to use that big target receiver. Where they can't do a lot of that bracketing, so to speak. Now, they can use the back of the end zone because that's almost like another defender. But I think that, to me, the red zone offense for LSU has got to be better throughout the season. It's got to evolve. It was not good against USC. I'd love to see Shelton Sampson get an opportunity. Yeah. And this is his shot here in the next couple weeks to show you can take over, that you can be that three guy that Kyron was a year ago.
Yeah, exactly, because your 1-2 is now Kyron and Hilton.
Right.
And so you're hoping that he can step into that three role, as you mentioned, Mike. And to your point also, Eric, about, you know, Caleb Jackson, that was a guy that had been hyped up all throughout the offseason, as, you know, dating back to spring ball when we were talking to the guys then. And in fall ball, all the reporters have been telling us the same thing, that Caleb Jackson looked really good. He looked primed for a huge year. But one thing that I will say is that the reporters that we talked to said that he's going to be, you know, probably more utilized closer towards the SEC schedule. But at the same time, like, I think they kind of went with a hot hand. John Emery had a couple good, you know, rushes.
And I get that.
And they decided to give him the most carries on the team, more than Josh Williams and Caleb Jackson. But Caleb Jackson finishing with 6 carries for 18 yards. Like, he had some good moments in pass pro, which I kind of noticed, Mike. But like,
he's gotten better there.
Yes.
He was not. That was an area when I talked to him and I brought it up, he was like, I'm working on it.
But that's something I was kind of surprised was the low usage rate for someone like Caleb Jackson.
I thought they would use him more too, Charlie. I'll be honest with you. And let's see how it rolls with that. And I'm always a big advocate of, man, if you got the hot hand, you keep rolling him the ball. But, man, that loss, you can pin a lot of that offensive line play for all the talent up front. Man, when you wasn't moving nobody.
You needed to run the ball late in that game, and you weren't able to do it. The three and out was the one that was the most indictable, in my opinion, Mike. When you had the ball back, like, your defense got that huge stop, you get the ball back kind of deep in your own territory, you have a chance to go maybe on an extended 5 to 6 minute drive, bleed a lot of clock, and they just couldn't run the ball. They go three and out, and then they give it right back to USC. So
your defense isn't good enough to get these stops and then put them right back on the field time after time. That's not going to work.
They gave you the stop. It was up to your offense to close out that game, and they just didn't.
They didn't do it. And so I hear a lot of stuff about, the defense played so bad. No, they didn't play good the last two times USC had the ball. But overall, if you'd have told me USC scores 27 points, I'd say that's a W for LSU.
Heading into that game, Lincoln Riley's teams in his career dating back to 2017, Mike, I did the numbers on this, averaged 43 points per game. LSU's defense with Blake Baker held him to 27. Like you mentioned, you should win that game if you have that offense for LSU.
Yeah, well, I saw it 10-10, you know, watching it 10-10 at half, I was like, hey, pinch me. I can't believe
it. Yeah, the low-scoring defensive slugfest we all expected.
Somebody pinch me about this. We'll be back to finish it off here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 in Hour Number 1 right after this break. We're finishing up here in Hour Number 1 of Sports Talk on the Big 870. Mike Dettelier along with Charlie Long. I want to tell everybody at 520, Mark Schlereth will join us, our Odyssey NFL insider. Also, he's got a new television show on Fox, so we'll get Mark to talk to us about that, and he will be the color analyst for Fox when the Saints play the Carolina Panthers right here in the Dome this coming Sunday. We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 right after this break. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTillo along with Charlie Long. Let's go to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. Let's try it again one more time, Eric. You're in the huddle with Mike and Charlie.
Hey, I want to get your take on this here. Now, right. I know Josh Williams and John Emery, pretty good ball players, but they're not the home run hitters that LSU needs. So what's the problem with, you know, Caden Drew? He's the 120-meter sprint champion in high school. And you know what Caleb Jackson is capable of. So what's the take so long to get the two guys in the game?
Yeah, I think the one thing with Shelton Sampson that you had asked about was Shelton, man, they stress emphasize in throwing a block downfield. And last year when he got in the game, Brian Kelly said it was 80-20. He would come down with the catch on – there was 50-50 throws. No, it was more like 90-10, and he had the 10. He wasn't making those plays. No, Shelton, one thing sometimes from something bad that happens, you learn something. Other than Zachariah Barnes, look the size of USC's receivers going up against those DBs. Man, Shelton Sampson gives you that – that size differential downfield. He can really get up in the air to make a catch. And so you would love that, and hopefully you can get the speed of Chris Hilton back.
That was something they were really
from
missing.
From the injury, because they didn't really stretch the field. Now, Kyren's fast once he catches the ball.
Yeah,
now,
but
he's
Hilton,
no track sprinter, sort of speak. That's not him. Chris Hilton's on a different level speed-wise.
And he opens up a lot for Kyren as well. It's almost kind of a similar situation like we talked about with Rashid Shaheed and Chris Olave.
Very similar, Charlie.
Yeah, like you're having right. A guy that can take the top off the defense, you got to pay attention to him. And that's what Chris Hilton has. He has elite speed. So some
Same
of the best
thing
speed
with
on the
Jelani
team.
Watkins.
Yes, yeah, the freshman. But with Shelton Sampson, he's an interesting one, Mike, because he's got the size as far as height goes, right? He's a 6'4". You know, he was super highly recruited out of Catholic Baton Rouge, a former 4-star guy.
He could have went anywhere.
Yeah, he really could have. He was 4-star, but he was the number 6 ranked receiver in the class of 2023. The thing about him is he's kind of slim, Mike. He's listed at 195. So, you know, you're talking about potentially getting involved in the run blocking game, but what Coach Kelly was saying, you know, the bite that I used for the Sports Flash earlier in his presser today was he needs to get involved in the passing attack. And I think, you know, you hope
that play him then.
Exactly, which you got to give him snaps. And that's what I think Coach Kelly was saying. They got to ramp him up to get him ready starting this upcoming weekend against Nicholls State. And if he's ready to go, get him involved, because that's just another weapon that you can use in the passing attack. And you have Shelton Sampson, a really talented, highly recruited guy, and then you also add Chris Hilton, who was injured and missed that first game, back to the lineup. Yeah, I think LSU's passing attack is just going to be fine. And they were, look, Kyren Lacy was awesome in the first half, we all know, but USC schemed to get him out of the game in the second half. And Coach Kelly kind of made, I don't want to say subtle jabs necessarily at the offensive play calling that they
didn't.
It
wasn't subtle. It was.
Yeah, he basically said.
He threw the jab.
He basically said we should have gotten him the ball more right. In the second half.
And that's something that Bob brought up yesterday about they were playing bracket coverage. But sometimes, yeah. You, especially in the red zone, you got to use that big target receiver. Where they can't do a lot of that bracketing, so to speak. Now, they can use the back of the end zone because that's almost like another defender. But I think that, to me, the red zone offense for LSU has got to be better throughout the season. It's got to evolve. It was not good against USC. I'd love to see Shelton Sampson get an opportunity. Yeah. And this is his shot here in the next couple weeks to show you can take over, that you can be that three guy that Kyren was a year ago.
Yeah, exactly, because your 1-2 is now Kyren and Hilton.
Right.
And so you're hoping that he can step into that three role, as you mentioned, Mike. And to your point also, Eric, about, you know, Caleb Jackson, that was a guy that had been hyped up all throughout the offseason, as, you know, dating back to spring ball when we were talking to the guys then. And in fall ball, all the reporters have been telling us the same thing, that Caleb Jackson looked really good. He looked primed for a huge year. But one thing that I will say is that the reporters that we talked to said that he's going to be, you know, probably more utilized closer towards the SEC schedule. But at the same time, like, I think they kind of went with a hot hand. John Emery had a couple good, you know, rushes.
And I get that.
And they decided to give him the most carries on the team, more than Josh Williams and Caleb Jackson. But Caleb Jackson finishing with 6 carries for 18 yards. Like, he had some good moments in pass pro, which I kind of noticed, Mike. But like
he's gotten better there.
Yes.
He was not – that was an area when I talked to him and I brought it up, he was like, I'm working on it.
But that's something I was kind of surprised was the low usage rate for someone like Caleb Jackson.
I thought they would use him more too, Charlie. I'll be honest with you. And let's see how it rolls with that. And I'm always a big advocate of, man, if you got the hot hand, you keep rolling him the ball. But, man, that loss – You can pin a lot of that offensive line play for all the talent up front. Man, when you wasn't moving nobody.
You needed to run the ball late in that game, and you weren't able to do it. The three and out was the one that was the most indictable, in my opinion, Mike. When you had the ball back, your defense got that huge stop. You get the ball back kind of deep in your own territory. You have a chance to go maybe on an extended 5 to 6 minute drive, bleed a lot of clock, and they just couldn't run the ball. They go three and out, and then they give it right back to USC. So
your defense isn't good enough to get these stops and then put them right back on the field time after time. That's not going to work.
They gave you the stop. It was up to your offense to close out that game, and they just didn't.
They didn't do it. And so I hear a lot of stuff about, the defense played so bad. No, they didn't play good the last two times USC had the ball. But overall, if you'd have told me USC scores 27 points, I'd say that's a W for LSU.
Heading into that game, Lincoln Riley's teams in his career dating back to 2017, Mike, I did the numbers on this, averaged 43 points per game. LSU's defense with Blake Baker held him to 27. Like you mentioned, you should win that game if you have that offense for LSU.
Yeah, well, I saw it 10-10, watching it 10-10 at half, I was like, hey, pinch me. I can't believe
it. Yeah, the low-scoring defensive slugfest we all expected.
Somebody pinch me about this. We'll be back to finish it off here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 in Hour Number 1 right after this break. We're finishing up here in Hour Number 1 of Sports Talk on the Big 870. Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long. I want to tell everybody at 520, Mark Schlereth will join us, our Odyssey NFL insider. Also, he's got a new television show on Fox, so we'll get Mark to talk to us about that, and he will be the color analyst for Fox when the Saints play the Carolina Panthers right here in the Dome this coming Sunday. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870 right after this break.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.